In Psalms 60, verse 4, there is a very intriguing statement. Thou hast given a banner to them that fear thee, that it may be displayed because of the truth. Did you catch that? Thou hast given a banner to them that fear thee, that it may be displayed because of the truth. There's a question which arises in my mind, and that is this. Does the product match the advertising? We live in an age when the product rarely lives up to the advertised claims. It is so disappointing to read the beautiful and carefully worded material in these four-color brochures and finally purchase one of these things and find out that it is far below the standard that you expected. But the world seems to have become conditioned to the big ballyhoo, the big ripoff. This is so well known that there really is little use spending more time on that. What I would like to ask is this. What about Christian advertising? No, I'm not talking about the advertising over the radio, or the television, or the newspaper, or even the handbills that are passed out. I'm talking about the Christian himself. As it says in Psalms, thou hast given him a banner, given a banner to them that fear thee, that it may be displayed because of the truth. Is the advertising on the banner of the average Christian dependable? Can a person buy this product with confidence? Now, as we've learned from before, the devil has traps set very close to these principles. In this case, he doesn't care how much we advertise, as long as the product is defective. He could care less how many handbills we put out or even full-page advertisements. He doesn't care. He doesn't care how many evangelistic campaigns we have. He doesn't care how many revivals we have, as long as the advertising, which is the life of the Christian, does not match. There was a small church out in the country. These people had moved out away from even the small towns because they wanted to raise their children in an environment of nature, away from the wicked influences of the city. They were very zealous people. They studied very hard. They gave very sacrificially, and literally built with their own hands this lovely little church. It wouldn't seat too many people, possibly 60 or 70, I presume. It was beautifully painted white on the outside. They had a little church school, a little one-room church school that was adjacent to it. The inside was so carefully cleaned each week, and it was very attractive. I was invited to speak out there one time, and it was going to be Visitor's Day. So we were advised to bring a visitor. I took my landlady. She was a Christian lady of another denomination, but a very wonderful person, and I invited her to go. Everything went along very well until we had the Sabbath school lesson. It seemed that there were two brethren in this church who had widely divergent views on one particular subject. And although the Sabbath school lesson was not on this subject, one of them was teaching the class. And it was only a matter of moments until he made a remark which the other man resented, and pretty quick they got into a verbal combat over this minor point of doctrine. And it became a very heated thing, and also very embarrassing. And I sat there wondering, here's my landlady. It's the first time she's ever been in the Seventh-day Adventist church. What's she thinking? On the way home, I tried to apologize to her for what had happened. Oh, she was most gracious. She said, I wouldn't have missed it for anything. It was so funny. Well, it may have been amusing to her, but it wasn't to me. The question in my mind was, with all the zeal in preparing the church, with the zeal in Bible studies, with the zeal in Christian education, with the zeal in missionary activities, what was the advertising? What was the product compared to the advertising? Could I invite my landlady to go again? I eventually purchased the place that she had owned. And one of the conditions of the purchase was that I keep Scoop. Now, Scoop was a dog of some uncertain ancestry, although he must have been related to an Australian shepherd sometime because he had one of those blue-white eyes. And he was a good dog, and she loved him. But where she was going in a large city, she couldn't keep Scoop. And so I promised to keep him and give him a good home, which I did. Now and then she used to write letters to us and ask how Scoop was and enclose a little money to buy a little special something for Scoop, because she loved that dog. I'll never forget in one letter she wrote, she told about what she was doing, her activities there. She inquired about Scoop. And then she said, are those dear people in that nice little church still fighting? Thou hast given a banner to them that fear thee, that it may be displayed because of the truth. Believe me, it'll be displayed. But what is it going to say? But it seems that this isn't a problem which is modern. In Luke 9:54, we find a very interesting incident. It seems that Jesus and his disciples were on their way down to Jerusalem. They passed through Samaria. He had sent his disciples, James and John, I think it was, ahead to engage a motel for the night. But when they got there, the local citizens, when they found out that they were going to Jerusalem, they just hung up the no vacancy signs. Oh, they were irritated. James and John came back, and here's what they said. Lord, wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them? They wanted to incinerate the whole place. It'd be a little difficult, wouldn't it, to say that this was the right kind of advertising. Jesus came to save men, not burn them up. There was another case, Matthew 26, verse 72, and in that area. Here was one of Jesus' disciples. As a matter of fact, he was Mr. Disciple. At least he did most of the talking. He was the leader. And Jesus is on trial inside the house of Caiaphas. And this disciple is standing outside by the a little fire that some people had out there because it was a cool and chilly night, and he's rubbing his hands in front of the fire when a little servant girl says, "Hey, I know you." And he ignored her. And she turned to the rest of them and she said, "I do too know him. He was with this Jesus of Nazareth." And Peter was trapped. And he denied with an oath. He said, "I do not know the man." Thou hast given a banner that it may be displayed because of the truth. Hmm. What about this banner? Sometimes we can be a little overzealous with our advertising. I had a friend. He and his wife were the members of another persuasion. They were living on the West Coast. I was on the East Coast. I visited them one weekend. And very kindly, they had found my church, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and they accompanied me to the church service. We went to Sabbath school, and we went to church. I appreciated this. I went to their church with them on the next day also. But they were good Christian people. And so at the close of the church service, there was a man came up and introduced himself, and I introduced myself. And I told him where I came from, and I asked, I said, please, I would like to have you meet Brother and Sister Hicks. So he turned to them and said, he said, well, I'm happy to meet you. He said, well, what church do you belong to? And they said, and Mrs. Hicks said, we don't belong to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. We belong to the Christian Church. And he blurted out, he said, what are you going to do about the mark of the beast? And I said, brother, they don't have to do anything about the mark of the beast. And he said, well, what kind of an Adventist are you? I said, I'm having some questions too. How careful we have to be. Volume 9, Testimonies to the Church, 189. If we would humble ourselves before God and be kind and courteous and tender-hearted and pitiful, there would be 100 conversions to the truth, where now there's only one. Notice, kind, courteous, tender-hearted, pitiful. What about our contacts? I learned a tremendous lesson from a man once upon a time. It was a number of years ago. He was going to work for an organization where I was working, and he was in a training period. We had moved to a little city for this training period, and we spent a month there. We were staying in a motel, and I normally go into a cafeteria, restaurant, or whatever it is, and order my meal and try to be polite to the waitress, etc., and pay my bill, and I leave. The thought of becoming personally involved with people like that somehow never did, was not part of my nature, I guess. So I was rather surprised the next day when we came in to have our breakfast at this particular little restaurant, and we ate most of our meals there, to have him call the waitress by name and ask her a question or two that I wondered, now, how did he know that? And she seemed to be very, she knew what he was talking about and very friendly with him. And pretty soon another came by. And so I got used to this pretty quick, that when he'd come in, why, as they were working, these waitresses would drop by and say, hello, hello, how are you today? And so forth. And he talked to them. And I thought that he was a little too friendly. But I didn't say anything. I had a question in my mind. This question only broadened one time when he said, do we have a meeting tonight? And I said, no, not tonight. And he said, well, I'll see you later. And he dressed up and left. I know when he came back to the motel, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And so this question broadened in my mind. The next night, we didn't have a meeting, and he also was gone. And I suppose that I had some real serious questions in my mind, because I could see how friendly he was with these various people. knowing they all called him by his first name and he called them by their first name, etc. And then one day the lady who was doing, one day he said, what is our schedule? And I said, well, there's about 3 days in here in this gap of the program and we don't have too much going on. He said, then I'm going to take, I'll be gone for a while. And he was gone for 2 days. Got in his car and drove away. Didn't say where he was going. Of course, he didn't have to tell me. But you can imagine two people working as closely as we were together that I had these questions. Gone till 1 o'clock at night, couple of three nights, and then takes his 2 day trip. What's he doing? Because I didn't know the man. I'd only met him prior to this, just twice. That's all. And then the lady who was working in housekeeping for the motel one day, he wasn't there, and she came in and said, that partner of yours, he's something. Yeah, I said, he's quite a fellow. I don't know that she and I were thinking exactly the same thing at the moment. She said, I just never saw anybody like him. And I said, no, he's different. There's no question about it. And he's a nice fellow. Yeah, she said, he certainly is. She said, do you know what he did for us? And I said, no. She said, well, my husband's been out of work for quite a period of time, and he's been very depressed. And she said, one day I came in to clean the room, and he was working at the desk over there working on some books, and he asked me about my family, and he asked me about my husband. And she said, I don't know. I told him my husband was out of work and that he was terribly depressed. And I said, what? He said, what does he do? And so she said, I told him. And so he said, well, he'd think about it. And she said, do you know that he drove 250 miles last week and contacted some people and got my husband a job, and my husband's over there working now? And that's where he was going those 2 days, see, but he didn't say anything. 250 miles he drove back to get this man a job. And she said, it's a real fine job for my husband, and as quick as he gets established over there and finds a home, I'm going to leave here, and I'm going to move over there, and I won't have to work here at the motel anymore. She said, and he did that just for us. One morning during this time, this two-day time, well, just after that, he wasn't there one morning, and I ate breakfast by myself, and the waitress came by, and she said, where's your partner? And I said, well, he had another appointment and so forth. And she said, he's some person. I said, yeah, he really is. And she said, you know what he did for me? And I said, no. She said, I have a boy that has to have constant care. And one day he asked me how my boy was. And I told him, well, or it said, I looked worried. He said, you look worried this morning. She said, well, I really am. She said, the woman that normally comes and stays with my boy each night while I work, and my shift changes now. She said, it's okay now for the daytime, but it changes. She can't come for the next two nights. And I'm worried. And he said, well, don't worry. I'll go take care of him. And that's where he was those nights. I said, do you work late? She said, yes, I don't get off shift till about 12:30. And she said, I didn't get home till about 1 o'clock, or about, you know, shortly after 12:30. He was interested enough as a Christian to find out that she had a boy. I didn't know that she had a boy. I never asked her. I didn't know that the lady who was in housekeeping had a husband who was out of work. I never thought to ask her. And then one day, about a year and a half later, I had moved to another section of the country. I had come back and I went to this particular church where we had been working. And at the close of the services, I was shaking hands with people as they passed out. Here was a lady who said, you remember me? And I said, well, your face does look familiar. But I was trying to pinpoint, you know, some church where I'd known her or something. And she said, you don't remember. And I said, well, I remember your face, but I can't remember where. She said, I was the waitress at the restaurant. Oh, yes, I said. She said, I'm a member of the church now. She was the lady that had the son that needed constant care. She said, you know, I wouldn't have become a Seventh-day Adventist if it hadn't been for your friend. But she said, he had such concern for me and my problems that that's the kind of religion I wanted. Thou hast given them a banner that it may be displayed because of the truth. Ministry of Healing, page 494 and 495. The consistent life, the patient forbearance, the spirit unruffled under provocation is always the most conclusive argument and the most solemn appeal. Isn't that a profound statement? The most conclusive argument. We think of arguing doctrines and things like that, but notice it's the consistent life, patient forbearance, spirit unruffled under provocation, the most conclusive argument. Until the judgment, you will never know the influence of a kind, considerate course toward the inconsistent, the unreasonable, and the unworthy. My, what a field Christians have if they would just realize that. We like to take care of the lovely people, the considerate people, the people that treat us nicely, but it says you'll never know the influence that you have if you have a kind, considerate course toward those who are inconsistent, unreasonable, unworthy, the unlovely ones. Her name was that slips my mind at the moment. But at any rate, I met her at the close of a service, too. And as she left this church, and my wife and I had been members there a number of years before, she said, please tell your wife hello for me. And I said, well, I certainly will. And I asked her name, and she told me, and I wrote it down. You see, well, if I'd written it down now, I'd know what it was. But she said this, she'll be surprised when she finds I'm a member of this church. And I said, she will? And she said, yes. So then she told me the story. But when I got home, I didn't tell my wife that I knew the story. I said, Mrs. Rose, and that was her name. I said, Mrs. Rose said to tell you hello. And she said, Mrs. Rose? And I said, yes, Mrs. Rose. Well, who is Mrs. Rose? And I said, you don't know her? And she said, no. And she thought and thought and thought. And finally, I didn't leave her on the hook too long. I said, well, how about a nursing home? Mrs. Rose. Oh, yes. She worked there. And my wife was a supervisor who came in twice a week and just supervised and set up the work. And Mrs. Rose worked there. Mrs. Rose told me that my wife had tried to witness to her, tried to give her bag, talk to her about religion, tried to give her magazines, tried to invite her to meetings, things like that. But she said, I really wasn't interested. Finally, I said to her one day, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but I'm not interested in religion at all. I really am not. And I prefer not to talk about it. And she said she never did talk about it anymore. But I used to watch her. How carefully I watched her. And I realized she had something that I didn't have and I wished I did have. She said, I was on the verge several times of saying, let's talk about it some more, but my pride kept me from doing it. And then you moved away. I didn't get the chance. But she said, another Seventh-day Adventist came in, and when she invited me to go to an evangelistic series, I accepted immediately. But it was because of the influence of your wife. I could see that she had something that I needed. She always seemed so calm, so happy, so kind. And now I'm a member. And I recall that my wife could hardly believe it. Mrs. Rose, she didn't want to have anything to do with religion. I said, that's Mrs. Rose. There's a key found in Acts, the 4th chapter, verse 13. You recall that Peter and John had gone up to the temple and they'd preached up there and they'd been arrested, and now they were hailed before the magistrates, before the high-ranking Jewish religious leaders, and they are giving them an examination, believe me. And they answer with such confidence the questions that are put to them, and they are so completely fearless standing before these men who they know have crucified their master. It says, they marveled, and they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. This banner will only display the right things if we have been with Jesus. A missionary from Africa, from China, told this very interesting story. There was a native worker way out, away from the mainstream of things, and he was working and lived in a little village. And in this village, there was a old grandma who was just notorious for her terrible language and her violent temper. Whenever the children saw her come out of her house and go down the street, they just fled in all directions because she was mean. And she was just, her reputation had spread all over. Everyone knew her. The native evangelist was holding a series of meetings. Someone invited old grandma to come, and she did. And there, for the first time, she heard of the tender, loving Jesus. And she gave her heart to him. And immediately, her whole personality changed. So now she wanted to be baptized. But under the policies that they had, the native worker couldn't do it. And he told her they'd have to wait until the missionary came from quite some distance, and then she could be baptized. And she pestered him all the time and said, when is the missionary coming? Well, pretty quick, Grandma. Be a few months. And next time she said, is he coming? Have you heard from him? Is he coming? Oh, she wanted to be baptized so badly. Finally, he could tell her exactly when the missionary was coming, and she was just elated. And she just could hardly wait for that day. Then came the day, and he was there. So the missionary went over to examine her to see if she was ready for baptism. So he said, can you name the books of the Bible? And she said, well, I can't read. And when one can't read, do you know who the names of Jesus' disciples? No, she didn't know those. She couldn't read. He asked her a number of other questions, and she didn't know the answers. He turned to the native worker and he said, how could I baptize her? She doesn't know anything. The native worker said, but please, he said, there must be some way. He said, her whole life has changed. When she was violent with her temper and everything, now she is the kindest person in the whole village. The children flock to her, flock over to her house. She never swears anymore. She never yells at people. She walks over 3 miles to come to church every Sabbath. She always brings the tithe from her small store and some offerings. There must be someone. And the missionary said, I'll try again. So he said to old grandma, do you know God? Oh, yes, she said, and her face brightened. She said, he's my heavenly grandfather. And he said, do you ever talk to him? Oh, she said, often, every day. I talk to him when I'm happy. I talk to him when I'm sad. I talk to him when I'm making bread. I talk to him when I'm out in the field working. Oh, I know him, she said. The missionary decided that she was eligible for baptism. Yes, I know him. The psalmist said, thou hast given a banner to them that fear banner to them that fear thee, that it may be displayed because of the truth. We all have the banner. Whenever we take the name of Jesus Christ, He gives us the banner. But the life of the demonstrator must match the message on the banner.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.